Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. But that's not just what we call ourselves. That's what our moms tell people when their Mac is still on Intel because they don't pay attention. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
Oh, shoot. I ran through the quota. Dang it. All right. Well,
I feel like we always do that. Every start of the episode, I always say that line and then you do a little laugh. I feel like we need to be more careful.
Well, not every time. I think you're maybe exaggerating just a bit.
I think it happens frequently enough that we should at least be cognizant of it.
Okay. Yeah, we can let's increase our cognition of it.
Yeah, I could not have said it better myself.
Absolutely. And you know what we should also be cognizant of? A bunch of new Macs that came out this week. How'd you like that?
Oh, that was good. And you're absolutely right. We got a lot to talk about today.
We really do. And you know what? This feels like I'm running it back because Sam and John had me on Genius Bar again to talk about all the new Mac stuff. But of course, you know, I didn't get into as much nerdy detail there because every time I try to say something, they're like, you're a nerd, shut up. Like, for example, let me get your thoughts on this, Noah. Okay. The new base model M4 equipped Macs have a couple of benefits outside of just being, you know, a faster chip. For example, they have additional Thunderbolt ports. If you get the iMac with four ports on the Mac, all four of those are Thunderbolt now. Previously, it was only two Thunderbolt and two regular USB-C. It also means that the base model M4 MacBook Pro gets another port back. It has the exact same port layout as all of the other MacBooks. Previously, you only had HDMI and SD on the right side. It only had two Thunderbolt ports. Then there's external monitors. You can run more and higher resolution external monitors on the M4 chip. And I said, look, I think that that's a benefit. And Sam and John were like, no, nobody cares about that. Normal people don't give a shit about that. And I say to that, no, I think normal people do care about that. They might not even know what that is. But I said this before. I've had friends, normal, non-tech-oriented friends, who've said, I'm setting up my monitor, or I'm setting up my workstation here. I've got my M2 MacBook Pro, and I have two monitors, but I can only get one of them to work. And I have to go, well, that's because they only support one external monitor. You got to go get a dock that'll split it out, and then you download DisplayLink. For normal people, I would argue, maybe this isn't a reason to buy, but they will absolutely notice these benefits.
Well, my first response is, shut up, nerd. We're here to joke around and goof off. But putting that aside, I do think that these are definitely legitimate benefits. I think, obviously, like the extra port, to be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever used all three of the Thunderbolt ports on my Mac. Like right now I have the camera, my like cam link for the camera is in one of them and my display is in the other one and the display itself has a bunch of ports on it. So I usually don't use it, you know, use all three at the same time, but there's no harm in having them. And it is nice that you have ports on both sides because sometimes it's more convenient for you to plug in on the right side or plug in on the left side, or if you have like a bulky cable and you can put it on one side and put it on whatever, you get the point. So having the extra port and especially it being on the other side is nice. The dual display thing, again, like, you know, kind of like you said, a lot of people probably don't, the people that are buying the base chip, maybe they don't, but there's no reason to think that they wouldn't, right? Have two displays. They don't have to be the fanciest, nicest. They only have two Pro Display XDRs, but like, I don't think it's that ridiculous to think that they could have two displays. Some people like, you know, a vertical display and a horizontal, or they put two next to each other. I mean, you have two displays next to each other. I know you're a special case, but those are all nice. And then I would add to that, the 16 gigs of memory starting. That was a big one for me, especially that they brought that to the MacBook Air, which didn't get any updates otherwise. Having that extra memory, obviously they did it for Apple Intelligence, but it'll benefit you everywhere. So it's definitely a nice thing to have as well.
Yeah, no, that is, you're absolutely right. And I think, I mean, nobody's questioning that 16 gigs is a big move. I would still argue it's long overdue. And I mean, here, let me just pull this up. Because I think that Apple, I mean, obviously they're finally coming around to the reality that everybody lives in, which is that we are not going to tolerate the RAM and the storage being 8 and 256. Now, I'm happy about the RAM. To be honest, I think, you know, I've seen people say, well, the MacBook Pro should all start with 32, or they've been like, well, the M4 Pro has 24, it should be 36, whatever. I don't genuinely think that that matters all that much. I think 16 gigabytes is probably going to be fine for the next five, at least, years. So I don't have an issue with that. What I do have an issue with is the storage and the pricing that they are still charging. So let's take the base Mac Mini, for example. This is a $600 product, which, and we'll talk about how I'm in love with this little nugget of excellence, but 16 gigabytes is standard, fine, makes sense. Why? How? Who? $200 to add 8 gigabytes of RAM. That is just outrageous. It's simply ridiculous. $400 to go to 32 gigs. These are the same pricing tiers that Apple has been using since the dawn of time. All right. I'm pretty sure Michelangelo was still carving away and Apple said, hey, $400 for 32 gigabytes of RAM. That's how long they've been doing this shit. Same thing with the storage. $200 for 512 gigabytes? I can buy a half terabyte NVMe for like $18. That is not an expensive component at all. And this is what's really bothering me, because if you take this base Mac Mini and you just do a very, very simple upgrade, you say, hey, I'd like a little bit more RAM, and I think a terabyte is reasonable. Oh, shoot. You just doubled your price. You just doubled the price of the Mac Mini just by saying, I want a little bit more RAM and I want a reasonable amount of storage. Boom. That pisses me off, because all of the devices that Apple has announced this week are a fantastic value until you do a single upgrade and immediately they're overpriced.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that's always been the story. And I feel like when Apple announced that things are moving up to 16 gigs, my reaction wasn't so much like, oh, that's great because people need 16 gigs of memory. Obviously, Apple Intelligence needs it and people will benefit from it. But it wasn't so much like, oh, finally, we've been struggling with 8 and now we have 16. It was more like, oh, now it starts at 16, so they're not going to price gouge you if you want to go up to 16 or if you want to go up. Obviously, they're going to gouge you beyond that, but like,
right.
You know, they basically shifted everything, you know, one, they moved all the memory like down a tier, basically. So it's, you start at 16 and then you go up from there. You don't have to start at 8 and go up to 16. So that right. was the reason why I really appreciated it, was, and appreciate in like a Stockholm Syndrome kind of sense, where it's like, it's like, you're not going to get gouged $200 to get up to 16. Because that was like part of my thing when I was thinking about getting a MacBook Air. I was like, if I'm going to go all in on the like the slimmest, most portable option, I want it to be the least expensive. And So I wouldn't want to upgrade the memory and the storage. But I was like, okay, 8's probably fine, but, you know, a little bit more would be nice. And then the 256 is really just... it really doesn't cut it anymore. But I guess Apple doesn't need to bump it up like they needed to bump up the memory for Apple Intelligence. and they know they're going to make a ton of money selling those $200+ upgrades. So
unless if they're selling it to DOS dude, because he does not tolerate these base storage configurations. And actually, I am working on a video that'll come out possibly after the M4 announcements. We'll see what happens with that video. I'm working on it now. The promise of upgradability is not dead. It's dying, but it's not 100% dead. And I think that there is a very remote chance that it could be coaxed back to life. But even without that, I honestly think that Apple could be forced. I think legislation, maybe the US wouldn't do it. Maybe the EU would have to do it. But I really think that this is something that we should be legislating, because it is, I would say this is more than just like a ripoff. I think it's anti-consumer to be charging that much for storage on a Mac when they're already forcing you to go through them to get it anyway, right? If it would be one thing if it's like, I mean, think about the App Store, right? They got into some hot water for making the App Store the only choice, but this is a non-modifiable, non-upgradable, there is literally one way to do it if you want to, you know, unless you're Colin and you're going to rip off the NAND and, you know, whip out the soldering iron, right? You have to pay their money and get absolutely ripped off. I mean, they charge you $2,200 for 8 terabytes of storage. In what world? Take a look at this here, right? This is the Dell XPS 13 priced comparably to the MacBook Air. They've got a, you know, it's a perpetual sale. So even if we factor in the fact that this is ostensibly $200 off, for $500, you can go from 16 to 32 gigabytes of RAM and 512 to a terabyte of storage. And that's where it falls apart for Apple. Because if we look at this, let's take this this $1,500 configuration, right? This XPS 13 arguably is comparable to a MacBook Air. Okay, so let's take that number. We've got 32 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte SSD. All right, let's go back to apple.com here, and we can go configure a MacBook Air. And I'm even going to, well, we're going to start with an M2 chip, okay? We're not even doing the latest and greatest. This is a $999 product. 16 gigabytes you get. You can't even configure that with 32, so that's kind of funny, actually. But if we go to 24 and a terabyte, whoa! We've leapfrogged the Dell completely, and now we're at $1,600. If we wanted to go for an M3 chip, good luck. This is going to get pretty ugly. We'll leave the regular base M3. Oh, I forgot that they still don't let you do 32 on this one, but a terabyte, that's $1,700. So it's like, you know, when you look at the starting configuration here, you think, okay, this compares quite well to that Dell XPS. An M3 chip is going to be faster. It's going to be quieter. You're going to get better battery life. Unified memory is better. Like, this is a better laptop, I think, in pretty much every way. But as soon as you go, oh, wait a minute, I want actual amount of storage, boom, gone, out of the water. It's a shame. It's really a shame. And to be honest, Dell is overcharging as well. Like, they are learning from Apple and saying, oh, wait a minute, we can make this all way too expensive.
Yeah, and it really is just like, you know, Apple knows that they can get away with it. But I agree with you that, like, it is anti-consumer in, you know, the fact that you have to get the storage from Apple and you have to do it up front. So it's the same thing, like, with the with the App Store. That was legislated. They said, you know, the App Store is the only way for you to download apps, and Apple takes a 30% cut in most cases. And the EU said that, you know, that wasn't allowed, and they had to let alternative app stores come on. And I feel like this is very similar. It's like, you have to get the storage from Apple. You have to pay Apple. And obviously they, you know, mark it up. They can, Apple can argue that, like, you know, maybe it's not market value because there's some special R&D and maybe their chips are better. I don't even know. But it's not $200 for an extra 256 gigs. That's not how much it costs Apple, even with all the extra stuff tacked on. And so I could see there being some legislation, probably in the EU, that would be like, you have to let you have to make it upgradable. You have to let third parties, you know, provide storage, or maybe they'll even settle on making the price less expensive. I don't know how it would go, but there has to be, or there definitely could be something. So I agree with you there.
Well, anyway, as disappointed as we are about the storage, and hopefully, I mean, they changed it with regards to RAM. I think you're probably right that it was based on Apple intelligence and wanting these things to have plenty of headroom, but hopefully they will come around and upgrade the base storage configurations in the future as well. But I want to talk about the actual devices, and we'll start with day one, which was the new iMac. We were not expecting to get the type of upgrades that we got. I literally thought it was going to be what we had before. Take the M3 chip out, throw it away, put an M4 in, 16 gigabytes of RAM, Bob's your uncle, out the door. Nope, we got a bunch of other stuff, from additional Thunderbolt ports to accessories with USB-C, which finally, and then we also get the center stage camera and the nanotexture glass option. Now, that's all well and good on the iMac, but what was really shocking is that we got those on the MacBook as well. I did not expect center stage and nanotexture on the MacBook Pro. That was really surprising.
Yeah, I wasn't. I think the center stage makes sense. I mean, the iPad has had it for a while, so it makes sense, but it's not something that we were really talking about. Like, it's not something that we were expecting. So it's definitely a nice thing to have. I don't personally use FaceTime, or I don't use the camera on my Mac super often, but I do sometimes, and it's a nice feature to have. And then what was the other thing we were just talking about?
The nanotexture coating.
The nanotexture. I was also surprised by that, because I feel like that was, correct me if I'm wrong, that was on the Pro Display XDR. Was that on the studio display? Was that an option there?
Yes. So it started, I think, on the Pro Display XDR, and then they brought it to the final version of the Intel iMac, which came out in 2020. Ooh. And then the studio display, and then the current remaining iMac, and then the MacBook Pro as well. And it's going to be interesting to see, because the MacBook Pro, like, it's a different thickness of glass. I don't actually know if the surface of the MacBook Pro is glass at all. It might be a plastic or a film or a polymer of some sort, but I'm surprised, frankly, that they put it on the MacBook Pro. I ordered it on mine. The one thing that gives me some pause is that, they brought it to the iPad as well. But remember, the thing that was weird about the iPad is it's only on the actual screen area. So, like, if you're using your iPad, the bezels are still shiny, and it's only nanotexture on the viewing area. And I'm a little worried that they're going to do that for the MacBook Pro as well. No, they can't do that, because then they'd have to cut it out around the notch, and the notch would be shiny.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird.
Yeah. How are they going to do
I'm
this?
I'm not sure.
Because as far as I'm aware, I have not seen any actual pictures of the nanotexture MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. But it is definitely interesting. I guess it's the first time that it's in a laptop, and it isn't something that I was expecting. But I think it makes a lot of sense to have on the MacBook Pro.
And I changed my mind. It looks really good. Oh, okay. I'm back on the bandwagon. I'm back, baby. So I found a video of it. It basically covers the entire screen area, except for right at the tiny little dot where the camera is, which obviously makes sense. So that I like. And I tweeted this out. it's actually the first time that Apple has offered something like this since 2012, which was the final high-res anti-glare version of the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I think I remember that one.
And that thing was that thing was pretty sick. I'm looking up now. I'm trying to find out how much it cost, because the Internet Archive has not been working for me lately.
It got hacked somewhat recently.
Well, supposedly it's back, but it's when I tried to use it the other day, it seemed like it was working, and then I tried to load a website and it crashed, and then it hasn't worked since.
Oh.
Yeah, don't really know why. But I think... I want to say that they charged an extra... I think it was initially $150, but they lowered it to $50. That might have been for the 17-inch, though, because this... So the thing was, the 15-inch... You got the anti-glare, and it was also a higher resolution. The 17-inch, it was the same resolution. So it might have been more expensive. It might have been $100 for the 15-inch. Either way, at $150, it's not the cheapest option out there. But hey, it's cheaper than 8 gigabytes of RAM, so I'll take it.
Yeah, that's pretty sad, but yeah, it is a cool option. I don't think we were expecting it, and I think for some people, especially, I feel like the laptops, like the whole thing is like the anti-glare screen, and I feel like if you have a desktop, in theory you could move it somewhere else, because it's a relatively permanent thing that you could move it and put it somewhere where it's not going to be an issue. And I know that there's like, it's still better to look at and whatever, but like if you have a laptop and you're taking it like outside, or you're putting it in a lot of different conditions, I feel like the anti-glare nanotextured display will have like more options or more opportunities to be useful on a laptop.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. So I ordered one. That's my main MacBook Pro. That's gonna. I wanted to have like one that I'm gonna use mostly. And actually it's the 14-inch. So I have one of each. I got M4 Max on the 16 and the 14, but I'm leaning towards using the 14 and then, doing like the M4 Pro for the 16-inch. Cause obviously in my line of work, I have to basically always have the current version of every single MacBook. With a couple exceptions, I don't have an M3 MacBook Air. I don't have a base M3 MacBook Pro, but I did get one and do benchmarks on it. So, but like for long term, because I need to have stuff to compare it to, you know, when Windows laptops come out, when next year's MacBooks come out, I want to have things for comparison's sake. So I usually keep a couple different MacBooks, which is really fun on the bank account. It was really great last year when I had to do it twice in 1 year. That was fun. That was a great time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, kind of rough. But I'll tell you what. I want to talk about the chips, because the things are getting pretty nuts. Legitimately pretty nuts. And I think the Mac Mini with the M4 Pro is probably the best computer that Apple has ever made.
Wow. That's a... bold statement. It also sounds like something that Tim Cook would say. These are the best computers we've ever made.
That's exactly what he would say. Which also, if it wasn't, kind of means you did a bad job, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're like, hey, this new version is almost as good as the last one, then how'd that happen? Explain that one, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want to know. So you said these are the best computers, and it's coming from you, so, you know, maybe it means something.
Well, probably not. I'm very biased. But I'll tell you what. Here's the deal. The M4 Pro is a monster, and I no longer, obviously, we'll have to wait and see. I'm going to run all the tests, but I personally am going to be making the case that you should not order an M4 Max MacBook Pro, because the M4 Pro is just that good, and I don't think the Max is worth the extra money. So let me walk you through it. First of all, I did some napkin math in my video on Tuesday with the M4 Pro chip to figure out how it would perform. And, well, it did not disappoint. It really did not disappoint. This chip is an absolute monster. And I'm gonna pull up the graph that I made because I want to show you guys exactly what I'm talking about here. So this is the graph that I had in my video. It might take me just a second to pull it up here. But the long and the short of it is, the numbers that I crunched would indicate that the M4 Pro should be able to outperform the M2 Ultra. And that is a crazy thing to be saying, because that the M2 Ultra came out last year. Or was it? Yeah, wait, it was. It was last WWDC. I can't believe it's been that recent. I've had my Mac Pro for a year and 3 months or whatever it is. Not really that long of a time, but already we have some absolutely insane numbers. This is the graph that I made for the video that I posted on Tuesday, which shows the M4 Pro smoking every other Apple Silicon chip ever made. And then the M4 Max numbers come in right on top of there. And I can tell you what, the real benchmarks have leaked in Geekbench 6. These are accurate to about 2%. So they're really, really, really close, those numbers I came up with. What is your initial thought on seeing a chart like this?
Wow, so the M4 Pro is faster than every other chip except for the M4 Max, is what I'm seeing here.
Correct.
That is, yeah, because the Ultra, the M2 Ultra, I double-checked. It was last dub that came out. And there's already, and that's the Ultra, right? That's two steps above. That's two M2 Max chips, you know, stuck together. And
yeah,
obviously you're not going to get double the performance of an M2 Max, but like, you were going to get more performance than an M2 Max. But like, wow, the M4 Pro. I mean, to be fair, the M4 Max is significantly higher. So for the audio listeners, the M4 Max here is 26,370, and then the M4 Pro is 22,731. So there is a 4,000 or 3,500 point difference between them, something like that, which is significant. Seems like a very significant jump, but still the M4 Pro is higher. It's about 1,000 or a little over 1,000, 1,300 points above the M2 Ultra, and that's an Ultra chip. So I'm very impressed.
Yeah, no, this thing is an absolute screamer, as Steve Jobs would have said. And I'll tell you what, here's where things switch from like, holy cow, this is impressive, to you got to watch yourself. Because the M4 Pro, the reason that the M4 Pro is that good is because this is the most performant core arrangement that the Pro chip has ever had. We have 10 performance and 4 efficiency cores. The M3 Pro was 6 and 6. The M2 Pro was 8 and 4. And the M1 Pro, I think, was also 8 and 4. So they're basically taking the Pro chip and bumping it up a notch. Last year was a weird year, and I reviewed the M3 Pro chip quite negatively. Because if we look, I mean, look on the graph here. The M2 Pro and the M3 Pro are really, really close. You know, you're talking about a difference of, let's see, what is that? 15,619 for the M3 Pro, 14, 207 for the M2 Pro. That's a 10 and a bit percent increase. That's really marginal. And that's because Apple, obviously the cores got faster, but there were less. They went from 8 performance to 6. But now we've jumped up from 6 to 10. And that's why the M4 Pro just completely leapfrogs everything else. And so that's why, if you look at this, you actually notice there's a smaller gap between the M4 Pro and Max than there was between the M3 Pro and Max. And that's because the M4 Max is the same layout. It's 12 performance, I think it's 12 performance, 4 efficiency. I'm not 100%. I think that's right. Yeah, 12 and 4, and then you get 32 or 40 GPU cores. So still, you're mainly getting GPU cores with the Max chip. But last year, the M3 Max, you got a bunch of CPU and you got a bunch of graphics. So that's why when you look at the numbers here, 21,045 for the M3 Max over 15,619. That's about a 34% bump from the M3 Pro to the M3 Max. But now, what we're seeing with 26,370 over 22,730 is a 16% bump. So, it's a lot less compelling to do that upgrade, but it gets worse for the M4 Max in terms of value. Because let me show you, let me show you another little tidbit that I spotted. If we look at the configurations, here's the Pro chips, right? Obviously, as with before, the base one, you get that double bind. So 12-core CPU, 16-core GPU. You know, you get your half a terabyte of storage. We know the drill. But what do you notice when you look at the $2,399 full M4 Pro and compare that to the M4 Max 14-inch MacBook Pro? What's the first thing that you notice as a difference between them?
GPU, unified memory, those are the, and the price, obviously.
Right.
Am I missing something?
So it's an $800 price differential, but what you might notice is the CPUs are actually the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you buy the binned M4 Max, you don't get the 16-core GPU and the 40-core, or the 16-core CPU, 40-core GPU. You get 14 and 32. And that's a little tough because that means that this CPU will be identical to the M4 Pro. It is 10 performance, 4 efficiency. So for $800... all you're getting is 12 GPU cores and 12 gigs of RAM. $800. That's it. That's all you get. Everything else is exactly the same. Thunderbolt 5 ports, 1 terabyte of storage, 14-core CPU, identical ports, the same power adapter, everything. Would you pay $800 for those upgrades? I wouldn't.
No, it's... yeah, that's a really good point. So it's the same. And then if you want to actually go up to the non-binned chip, if you want to go up to the 16-core, it's $900 to go to the non-binned CPU.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because it's actually worse than that. It's worse because they won't let you... the RAM options are limited. Right. So if I'm at 24 gigabytes of RAM, 24 gigabytes of RAM here, if I want to add, we're going from the M4 Pro, the full regular M4 Pro, to the full regular M4 Max, that's $900 extra. And it's going to force me to spend $400 on 48 gigabytes of RAM as well. So that means if you want to make that upgrade, You're $2,399 just to get the full M4 Max. That's $1,300. That's an entire MacBook Air that you have to spend on top just to get that M4 Max.
Wow. I did not realize that.
And I'm like, dude, to get 16% better CPU performance, to get a little extra RAM, to get more double the GPU cores could be useful. But for that price, I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, people are saying in the chat, like, the memory bandwidth is different. So
that is true.
Like, not that there are no differences in that chip, but we're talking about there are some people that maybe they need the max. They're just like, the pro is not it. I need the max. I need the best of the best. I need all that bandwidth and performance and, you know, whatever it is. But like, the people that are between the pro and the max, the people that could use the pro but would think about the max, like, those are the people that we're talking about. And this is a lot of money to spend on the max chip. With you spend a good chunk of money and it's not that much of a difference. You have to spend a very good chunk of money to get that difference. And it's a lot of money.
And by the way, those numbers that we were comparing, that 16% improvement in performance for the CPU, that's with the full M4 Max. So that's a $1,300 upgrade to get ostensibly twice the graphics, 16% more CPU, and additional bandwidth on the memory and more RAM. And now, I'm not saying, you know, this person here said big difference in AI. Sure. Just as having double the GPU cores would make a big difference if you're developing 3D, if you're doing particle simulation, if you're doing 3D rendering, you know, there are use cases that will undoubtedly demand that extra performance. But it comes at a pretty significant cost to the point that I think it kind of, I think it might be a little counterproductive. Now, Colin pointed out that the M4 Max fabrication process must have very low yield rates to have this much of a price jump, which I definitely think is true. But I think Apple does kind of shoot themselves in the foot a little bit here, because, you know, the goal with the whole entire Apple product stack is to kind of get you to just work your way up the ladder by doing these very gradual upgrades. You know, you start at the M4 and you think, well, you know, I might as well get a terabyte of storage. So that's $1,799. Well, if I'm going to pay $1,799, then I might as well spend the extra $200 and get an M4 Pro, because that's going to come with, you know, more RAM, more performance, Thunderbolt 5. I like all of those things. And then if I'm going to do that, I might as well get a terabyte. So we'll just get the $2,399 one, because then I'll get even more performance. And then if I'm going to, like, you see, that's the sort of the mental logic that Apple wants you to go through, right? Is once you take your M4 and you spec it how you want it, you're tantalizingly close to an M4 Pro and you go, maybe I should just get that instead. And that's how you kind of work your way up this ladder. But you can't do that if you're going to force people to jump $800, $900, $1,300 in one fell swoop. It doesn't really work. And that's still, by the way, with 1 terabyte of storage for a $4,000 laptop.
Yeah. And I feel like, I think it's very interesting because, like you were saying before, Apple can kind of play with the core layouts of these things. So the performance versus efficiency cores. And so it almost seems like, you know, because last year was a bit weird, the core layout was a bit weird, where they had like the 6 performance cores instead of being 8, and now they jumped up to 10. So I almost feel like this year is the year that they were trying to get a lot of performance out of the Pro chip. Maybe they're trying to get a lot of people to upgrade to the Pros. And so we were talking about, like, theoretically next year, if there's going to be a redesign, because we're expecting one next year, maybe the year after, but let's say it's going to be next year, there's going to be a redesign, and we were saying that it was probably going to be, the focus was going to be on the new design, and so the performance of the chips wouldn't be as much of a difference. And so I feel like maybe Apple can play with the core counts or the core distribution again, and, you know, maybe the Pro chip will go back down to 8 performance cores, but it'll be, you know, the M5 chip, so they'll be more powerful, and maybe it'll be a marginal difference, marginal increase, or it'll be very similar to before, but it'll be a little bit more power efficient if there are fewer performance cores. So I feel like it's very interesting the way that Apple can play with the core layouts to do different things. And so this year, the Pro and the Max are pretty close together, and the Max doesn't seem like a very good upgrade. I wonder if next year Apple will kind of back off on that a little bit, especially if there's a redesign, and maybe the gap will be bigger. So it's just, you know, different ways to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right that they did such a massive jump in the Pro chip this year. I can't imagine that the M5 is going to be this big, right? I mean, let me just do my quick napkin math again. 22,731 for the M3 Pro over 15,619. This is 45% faster than the M3 Pro. That's insane. 45% performance jump in 1 year? Holy cow. So yeah, next year, probably not going to be a very big update on the Pro chip. Probably going to be a significant update on the Max chip. But I also want to underscore that as expensive as the M4 Max is, these chips are absolutely bananas, okay? I looked this up on Genius Bar yesterday. Let me find the name of the CPU that I was looking at. Because the M4 Max is one of the most powerful CPUs in the world. Like, legitimately just one of the fastest that you can have. Unless you're talking about, you know, crazy, crazy, you know, speed record type, overclocked, water-cooled, sub-zero cooled chips like that. Off-the-shelf computer chips, you are not going to find pretty much anything that can top the M4 Max. And I'm trying to load it up here to find the exact CPU that I was talking about. Why is... Okay, that website just broke. What is happening here? What? Am I losing my mind? Jesus. But, why is this not working? Do you know... I'm going to sidetrack us for a second here because
okay.
The state of our world is very funny right now to where, like, if I'm trying to load a website and it takes more than like 4 seconds, I start getting mad. I'm like, this is stupid. Why is this happening? Who allowed this? I'm very impatient.
No, I agree. Because, yeah, because like 99% of the time, if it doesn't load instantly, it means that, like, there's something wrong with your connection or something wrong with the website.
Exactly. I think it's something wrong with the website. So I'm going to... Unfortunately, I won't be able to share my screen here. But it was really interesting to make this comparison because... Let me pull this up. Oh, my God. Dual monitors in macOS is kind of a pain in the ass. These are the kind of things that if we didn't do a live podcast, would be a little easier for me to seamlessly pull up. But
yeah.
Anyway, the M4 Max, and by the way, I'm not talking about, you know, oh, for a laptop chip. I'm not talking about, oh, there's no laptop that can beat it. I'm talking about all CPUs that exist on the world, okay? And... Okay, this is, it's, you know what? Their website sucks. It's not working. I'm not loading it up. I can't remember the name of the chip, but it's the top of the range Intel Xeon 56 core processor with a peak power consumption of 1,900 watts.
Oh my God.
And that is yielding the exact same score, actually slightly lower than the M4 Max. What?
Wow. Pretty crazy.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, I mean, that's super impressive. Very cool.
So it's like, it really truly is unlike anything that has ever existed before. And just like casually offering that in a 14-inch laptop. Now, how well is that actually going to run in that chassis? Well, you're going to have to subscribe and find out. But if you were buying a MacBook right now, I think the M4 Pro is the better option. And honestly, I'm going to say something controversial here. I think the M4 MacBook Pro is perfectly sufficient. And if you need power, you should probably look at the Mac Mini. Because that thing is a real good deal. Take a look at this configuration. This is how I'd spec it. Regular M4 Pro. I want the full fat. None of this binned nonsense, you know? 24 gigabytes of RAM I'm fine with. And I would probably bite the bullet for a terabyte just because 512 is just not going to cut it. So you're looking at $1,800. A couple months, it'll probably go on sale for more like $1,500. And still, this is like probably one of the top 10 fastest CPUs that exists on the world for $1,500. That's nuts.
Yeah, I guess we haven't talked about the Mac Mini like at all yet, but I mean, it's basically what we were expecting, but it's like really nice to see. Super small, which is exactly what we wanted. It's cool to see the ports on the front. I know we were talking about if they were going to do that or not. My thought was that they were not going to put the SD card slot because that really seems like a Mac Studio kind of thing, which ended up being true. But they did put the USB ports on the front, which is super nice. So what is it? It's two on the front, and is it four on the back? Is that right?
It's three on the back, two on the front. It's kind of weird.
Three on the back. Okay, interesting. But like,
yeah, I don't really know
that's
why.
That's five ports. Five ports is pretty good. Honestly, if you wanted to, I feel like having the built-in storage is nice, but if you wanted to not pay Apple $200 for the terabyte, I guess the Mac Mini is easier than a laptop to just plug an external drive into. It's a bit more annoying to have to manage files that way, but theoretically it could be done a bit easier and you have plenty of ports to handle it, so could be one potential option. But it looks super nice. I love the look of it, and yeah, it's basically exactly what we wanted and what we were expecting, and it's cool to see.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a good point, especially now with Thunderbolt 5. We're going to see some really, really fast external storage. And I personally, I think it's always best to have a terabyte of local storage. I mean, that's all I have on my Mac Pro. You know, the SSD, I did not change that at all. It's upgradable even on this thing, but I'm not paying Apple a cent for storage if I can avoid it. The only reason that I would do a terabyte is that I really think on a MacBook Pro, anything with that kind of performance is going to munch through storage. I mean, if I make a mistake, if I pull out my MacBook Pro, I have a terabyte on all of them. If I pull up a Final Cut Pro, it'll take me one video to fill that thing up. One Luke Miani YouTube video will fill a 1 terabyte hard drive. So it's like, holy shit, what are we doing here, folks? These machines are unbelievably good at video editing. But when you ship something with 512 gigabytes, are you joking me? I honestly think I could probably fill that up with like two or three sponsor segments just because of the render files. Like, that is not sufficient. On a MacBook Air, I get it, okay? You can sell a MacBook Air with 256 gigabytes, and that's fine. I know plenty of people who probably don't even have nearly anything. The only reason that they're going to need storage is because, you know, over time, documents, downloads, folder, things that you put on your desktop, it adds up eventually, right? So, like, yeah, I would ideally like 512, but on a MacBook Air, on an iMac, on a base Mac Mini, fine, I get it. But anything that has Pro in the name should have a terabyte.
I agree. I think, okay, obviously there are different kinds of Pro workloads, and video editing is probably the most demanding, or at least one of the most demanding in terms of storage space. There mm-hmm. are other Pro... I mean, photos will definitely be big if you're working with raw photos. Okay, coding, for example, that's obviously not going to be as much storage space, but it does still take up storage space, especially depending on the kind of programming you're doing and, you know, what kinds of assets and things you have. Game programming is going to be, you know, pretty taxing. But I do agree with you, especially given the minimal marginal cost to Apple to increase the storage space. And, like, when you start running low on storage space, it's literally the worst thing because your programs don't work as well, especially in Final Cut. If it can't do the render files, it's going to be a mess. And then you have to go through and move stuff off or delete stuff, which is, like, such an annoying and tedious process to have to go through that it's just, like, they should just put a little bit more. I agree with you. If it's a pro product, especially a Max product, I get that it's just the name of the chip, but, like, if you're saying that this is the thing that's for the pros, the most pro of the pros, this is the one for you, like, and you put 512 or a terabyte in that, you know, a terabyte maybe, I don't know, but, like, you can do better than that.
Apple, it's a $4,000 goddamn laptop, and it has 1 terabyte of storage, non-upgradable. And look, the thing is, when you buy a 1 terabyte MacBook Pro, we know that there are 8 pads for the storage, because that's how they ship them. When you get 8 terabytes of storage in a MacBook Pro, you get 8 1-terabyte NAND modules. So every single MacBook Pro logic board has the pads for that amount of storage, because they're not going to obviously change that. But the craziest part is, even if you had the technical know-how to say, okay, we got blank pads over here, let me add a chip to it, you can't. You cannot do that. I've talked extensively with Colin about this, and basically, it's not just the pad that they leave empty, but there are also components that surround each NAND chip, capacitors, resistors, things like that, that obviously are required. So the problem that you run into is, it's not even that they're not user upgradable, with the caveat that if you know how to solder and do chip level work, you can upgrade it. It's they are not upgradable, period, full stop, for the life of the computer. I guess there is technically the caveat, which is that you could get tiny little tweezers and a microscope and add each of those. It's like almost 50 components per pad that you would need to add. And even then, I'm not sure if that's possible. But, like, I mean, come on, dude. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously, I can understand why Apple wouldn't populate the pads that aren't going to be used. But the fact that it's so easy for, like, it's the fact that the pads are there and it would be such a minimal marginal cost to, one, upgrade the storage, or even if not, you know, upgrade it, but, like, make it upgradable to other people. It would be such a minimal marginal cost and such a minimal additional effort that, like, there's no reason why they can't do that.
Absolutely. Colin here pointed out 160 components to populate the second set of 4 pads. That's crazy. And to your point of it being a minimal cost, when I worked with Colin on the video where we upgraded an M1 Mac Mini from 256 to 2 terabytes, we paid $80 for that RAM, for the NAND. And that's, you know, that's consumer pricing. That's whatever, you know, you could find in the wild. I'm sure Apple is paying $15-$20 for a 1 terabyte NAND chip, if not less. So it's like, I get it in 2015, right? In 2015, NAND was expensive. And these prices were still high then, but they were, like, in line with what other people were charging, because they used extremely high quality chips and it was more expensive back then. But the fact that they have not changed that at all, I mean, I think if you might, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure in 2019 to go from 512 to a terabyte was I think it was maybe $400. And now it's technically 200? Yeah, 200. Okay. That's ridiculous. They like it's been half a decade. And you've gone from 400 to 200 on I could find an SSD that is just as fast as what you get in a MacBook for $58 on Amazon for 1 terabyte.
I don't want to harp on it too much, but like it definitely is something that Apple needs to work on. They did the 8 to 16 gigs of memory. That's great. You know, we love it. Next they got to do, and I don't know what's going to make them do it. I think the memory, I think, was directly an Apple Intelligence thing, because they said like you need 16 gigs of memory to run Apple Intelligence or something. So that was it. I don't know what the thing is going to be that gets them to upgrade the storage. Maybe that'll be Apple Intelligence if they have some like bigger model that needs, I don't even know. I don't know what it's going to be, but like hopefully something, maybe legislation, something will make them do it.
I think, I mean, eventually it's going to happen, right? They used to be selling 128. It'll be way too late, but it will happen eventually. I want to say next year or the year after that. If it takes them more than 2 years to double their storage allocations, I will be very, very pissed. Because, I mean, I'm already pissed, obviously. But, I mean, more than pissed, it's just sad, right? We've got this comment here saying, are Apple Silicon computers the best performance per dollar from any other computer? And the answer to that question is a qualified yes. Because in their base configurations, the performance that you get, the quality of a device, the battery life, the fan noise, the power consumption, the form factors, the screens, the keyboards, it's all absolutely best in class. But every single time you have to follow that with but for the same money you can get double or quadruple the storage elsewhere. But it costs way too much once you try to put a usable amount of storage in it. And it's such a shame, because if not for this storage fact, I would sit here and say unqualified, the new MacBook Pros, the new Mac Mini are the best laptop and desktop respectively in the world, bar none.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, you know, I've mentioned a bunch of times on the show that I was thinking about getting a MacBook Air, and the main thing that stopped me was, you know, it's 8 gigs of memory, 8 gigs of memory and 256 gigs of storage. They fixed the memory, but I just checked. I didn't even realize this, but I have a terabyte in my computer, and it says I have 32 gigs free out of a terabyte. So I didn't realize that I was using that much space. I think I haven't cleaned up this computer in a while. I'm sure that there's quite a bit that I could purge out of it, and I guess I'll probably have to do that. But like, I think going to 256 would be pretty rough if I'm already filling up a terabyte, even if I can get rid of half of that, and it's just trash. That's still too much, you know. That's too much. Still half, yeah, half a terabyte, and I would only have 256. So that's the main thing that's stopping me. Is like, I would love to get that, because the performance, it's like you said, the performance is there, the quality is there. It's such a, you know, a thin and light and portable thing. It's great, but like, the value, as soon as you try to upgrade anything, the value goes away. And if I'm going to be, you know, replacing my very expensive MacBook Pro, or especially if I'm getting a secondary computer, the value needs to be there. And right now, it's just not there with the storage upgrades.
Yeah, it's a shame. And, you know, again, I don't mind it on the MacBook Air. Like, the amount of storage that you get, that 256, fine. That's honestly kind of an industry standard at this point. 256 on a $1,000 premium ultrabook is normal. What's not normal is charging $200 to go to 512. That,
yeah,
you know, okay, $200 to go to a terabyte, still a ripoff, but that would be tolerable. I'd be okay with that. $100 for 512, I'd grumble maybe, but I would be okay with it. And it's a shame because, you know, it kind of has taken a lot of the narrative. You know, I'm talking about it here a lot because on my videos, I was very, very enthusiastic. I'm very, very bullish on these chips. But most of the top comments on my videos were, I can't believe they charge that much for storage. It really does impact the value of the whole machine when you're getting ripped off in that way, which is it's a shame. Because, you know, I looked it up here. The most powerful Intel processor, consumer grade, is a Core i9-14900KS. That scores 24,000 multi-core in Geekbench 6. So that is about halfway between the M4 Pro and the M4 Max. What? That is a desktop chip. If you put that in a laptop, the battery would last 8 minutes, and it would overheat and explode. And Apple just casually, without even blinking an eye, is like, yeah, put it in a Mac Mini that is literally 5 inches by 5 inches. And it's 95% of the performance of like a 180-watt chip. That's crazy. That's in a perfect world, that is actually the funniest thing that they could have done. And they didn't even make a big deal about it. If I was Apple, I would be having a field day with the fact that I released a micro PC that has the same level of performance that my like 40-pound desktop, which has a 900-watt power supply, has. That's legitimately like, these are two different worlds.
No. Yeah, it is, and then they're so close to being perfect, and then it's just the last, you know, the storage, the high cost of the upgrades. And I get it; it's where they make a lot of their money. It's what they've been doing. It's easy for them to do. But like, I agree with you. They have such a good game going, and if they just did that one extra step, making the storage, you know, more reasonably priced for the upgrades, maybe make the starting storage more reasonable on certain models, it would go such a long way to mm-hmm. making it to having no qualifiers. No, this exactly. is it. This is the best.
And we're really, really, really close to that threshold. I don't want to ignore the GPUs. Less of an update this year. I know we're running a little over here, but that's okay, because I do want to mention something that I found that's pretty interesting. So Apple's GPUs are underrated right now because they don't really draw that much attention to them, and because most people compare GPUs in games, and Apple doesn't really optimize for that well. But I've been doing all of my benchmarks and testing the existing stuff, right? And one of the recent developments is Apple now supports Death Stranding, which is a pretty recent AAA title. Now, I was doing my benchmarks at 4K, highest settings, okay? So max it out, 4K resolution, and you can get 60 FPS on an M3 Max. That's crazy, because I looked it up, and according to Reddit and system requirement websites, to do 4K 60 in the world of x86, you're looking at needing about a 2080 Ti. So I'm not obviously saying that those two GPUs are equal, because in different tasks it's going to be different, and I'm sure that there is some direct optimization that went into supporting for Apple Silicon, so it probably is performing a little bit outside of its class, but it doesn't distract from the fact that a 2080 Ti performs the same in this game as an M3 Max. That's incredible. And the M4 Max is probably going to be about 20% faster than that still. So, like, Apple really, they have the answers. They have the best technology. And I really wish that they would open up just a tiny little bit more, make the storage a little bit less, make their compatibility a little bit easier. If it weren't for the fact that the games don't run on it, the M4 Pro Mac Mini would probably be one of the best value gaming machines that you could buy. Full stop. That's crazy. That's a weird thing to think about. What?
Yeah, I mean, Macs are definitely not known for gaming, you know, obviously. But it does seem like Apple has made some pushes. They usually talk about games in their keynotes. They added, like, the game mode, which is, I don't know. Or maybe that was, I don't know if that was to the, that was to the Mac too, right? It was the iPhone, I know, but I think it was also to the Mac that it, like, yeah, stops background tasks. So they're, like, they're, at least they're thinking about it. They're not super serious, but they're thinking about it. But yeah, no, I mean, the GPUs are impressive. We talked about the other aspects of the chip that are all impressive. This was a good year. We didn't really talk too much about the format of the event, that it was like three announcements on 3 days. That was a little bit interesting. But you know, the stuff that we got was pretty good. You know, I'm happy overall with what we got.
Yeah, absolutely. So, man, sorry. I definitely rambled and ranted a little bit, but there's just so much to talk about. And when we're here next week, we'll have a lot to talk about, because we are going to actually have our hands on these devices, and I'll have actual numbers and data and stuff that I can share with you guys. So, of course, get subscribed if you're not already. You probably are if you're watching this, let's be honest. But, you know, I can see we have more viewers than we normally do. So people are really, really interested in these things. And I'm going to have a shit ton of coverage, lots of videos. Get subscribed. Starting Friday or Saturday, depending on how quickly I'm able to get my videos out, I'll have a bunch of stuff coming your way. It's going to be, I think, a lot of fun. So we will see you guys in a week.
Yeah, and you want to do the
sign? Yeah, well, I didn't know if maybe you had additional further thought or anything.
My bad. Yes, very exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing that coverage. And yeah, we'll be here next week to talk about all of the stuff. So be excited for that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how close Noah's getting to considering an upgrade in the future. Ooh, maybe. Who knows? Stinky. Anyway, I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We'll see you next week for an exciting episode, and have a great night.